This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How you doing?
What day is this?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's the 10th day. On the 10th day of Christmas. Yeah, that's
yep.
It. That's
it is what 10, we are. 10,
and
10,
today,
10.
Today, I am going to be discussing one of the most notorious crimes in South Australia.
All right. Well, I'm totally excited. Let's go. Let's hear it.
So we're going to go all the way back to 1971, too.
Yes.
Not 1971 and two, just 1971. Clifford Cecil Bartholomew, his wife Heather, and their seven children, age ranged from 4 to 19, lived in a small farmhouse in Hope Forest, just south of Adelaide in Australia. Hope Forest is a very, very small rural community. Small. I mean, I'm talking small.
You're
today's
talking
population?
Like Australia small, right?
No, today's population is 157 people.
Hmm. Tiny.
And that has grown by 44% since 1975.
Oh.
Clifford, 40 years old, worked for an earth moving company, and I'm guessing that's an excavation company here in the States. And Heather helped out at the local dairy farm. Actually, the farmhouse that they lived on, they rented from Clifford's boss. Money was very tight for the family, and they were very careful with everything they spent. But the one thing Heather would spend money, what the family would spend money, would they would allow Heather to travel by bus to see her sister, Winnis King. Now, Winnis, side note here, Winnis lived on an army base just outside of Sydney. Her husband, obviously, was in the military, and they lived in the military housing. Early in 1971, the Bartholomews took in a boarder by the name of Max. Now, Max was in his early 20s, and he was recovering from wounds he received while fighting in Vietnam. And around Easter time, Heather decided she was going to go stay with her sister in Sydney for about 3 weeks. Somehow, it was decided that Max would go with her so he could see his old army buddies at the base and also possibly keep Heather company during the day since Winnis and her husband would be gone. Now, while they were away, Heather kept in touch with the family. She called Clifford a few times to check in, and she also wrote the kids. But right before she was due home, she called and said, you know what, there's just this mix-up with the bus schedule. I think she booked it wrong or something happened, but you know what? We're going to be a week later than we had originally planned.
Hmm.
Now, of course, Clifford wasn't pleased at all. I mean, he wanted his wife back. He was taking care of all seven kids.
Yeah, that was a lot.
One's a lot, much less seven. But what could he do, right? While she was gone, Clifford had received $100 in a tax return. He got taxes back. Mm-hmm. And today's money, that is about 11,000 Australian dollars, or compared to 820 US dollars. Now, Clifford decided to take the money and surprise Heather, and he bought them a new, well, new to them, car. Clifford was so excited to show Heather. He was just pleased with himself. Clifford drove the car to pick her and Max up at the bus station. When Heather saw the car, it was obvious she wasn't impressed. It kind of devastated him. And honestly, she was actually cold towards Clifford.
Hmm.
On the drive home, Heather started telling Clifford all the fun she and Max had in Sydney with Winnis and her husband. She had tales of drinking and dancing the night away, and, you know, it was kind of funny because Heather wasn't really a drinker. But here she was telling drunken stories where she had to be put to bed. She was so drunk she could hardly stand.
Hmm.
And this kind of confused Clifford a little bit. When they got home, Heather totally warmly greeted the kids, and Clifford noticed the huge difference in between the greetings between him and the kids, and he was really hurt by this. And I kind of understand that,
oh,
you know?
Yeah.
You're going to love your... I always greet my kids more affectionately than my husband, but that's neither
they're kids,
there.
Too, though.
They're kids, right.
You know? Yeah.
Clifford noticed a big difference in the greetings, and he was really hurt. In fact, the next day, he wrote down in his journal about it. And he also said the intimate time he and Heather had in bed the night before wasn't very good. It was almost like she was not really there.
I think she left her mind back in Sydney.
Think?
I think so.
He also wrote that Heather was very indifferent towards him, yet very warm and bright with Max.
Oh.
Clifford suspected that something could have happened between the two on the trip, and he even confronted Heather about it, but she denied it. And she said he was just being silly and imagining things.
Now, Max is her son-in-law, right?
Max is the boarder.
The boarder. Didn't he go to Sydney with them or no?
He did. He was a Vietnam vet who was wounded in the war.
Okay.
And to recover, he rented out space at the Bartholomew's house.
Gotcha.
Which they always needed the extra cash.
Yeah.
That year, Hope Forest had received an immense amount of rain. And Clifford didn't really work much. And in fact, he was furloughed. And even with the unemployment checks he was getting, it still wasn't enough money to go around. And he knew things were going to be much tighter than normal. And this being a man's man, it sent him in a bit of depression, right? I mean, he's going to have a hard time providing for his family. You get the joke.
Well, yeah. Plus, the person that you took in out of the goodness of your heart. I mean, yeah, you need the money, but... they're literally, you know,
right,
possibly doing that with right there under your nose.
Yep.
Not cool, Max.
Well, and the whole thing sent him into depression. I mean, the money situation, the jealousy of Heather and Max, that started to intensify. And in his journal, he once again, he wrote that he just knew they slept together. He knew there was something going on. And Clifford loved Heather so very much, and he loved their family, and he would have done anything to win Heather back. And he started helping around the house more. He started helping with the kids. He would bring Heather breakfast in bed. And even though they had very little money, he bought her a really nice watch.
He's trying to win
but
her back. Yeah.
What he is. And it didn't work. Nothing worked. Clifford decided he needed to get away from everything and just clear his mind. So he decided to go to Port Lincoln for a few weeks. That's about a 7-hour drive, I believe, from where they were. And he hoped maybe that if he went away, Heather would really miss him and it would ignite something again and their passion would return and she would just fall back in love with him and everything would be back to normal, right?
Mm-hmm.
When she told his plans to Heather, she's like, oh yeah, go ahead, have fun. Stay as long as you want to.
Yeah. Yeah, because now her and Max have the house.
So as Clifford was packing up the car, getting ready to leave, he remembered something that he had forgotten, so he walked into the house. And when he walked into the living room, he found Max was lying on his back, and Heather was lying over him, and they both were giggling.
What?
When they noticed Clifford, Max said, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, I was only tickling her. Jeez. Yeah, but tickling her where, Max? That's what we want to know.
Mm-hmm. And with what?
Clifford called Max outside and said, listen. They had a big talk, and then basically Clifford told him to stop, and he said, quote, just cut it out in the future. I'm sorry, there'd be much stronger words if I caught somebody doing that with my husband.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking he's desperate, and she seems to be like, she'd be like, fine, see ya. And maybe he knows that, you know? So
yeah,
he's
just trying to hold on.
Right.
Let's hang on
to what we've got. Come on, boy, because we got a lot. I got a lot.
Musical interlude completed. When Clifford returned, things were actually worse, which Heather and Max fought worse than before. They screamed at each other, and it was a miserable existence. And after one particular bad fight, Clifford threatened to shoot himself and the kids.
Oh.
Heather replied she couldn't care less. And then the next week, Heather decided it was time for her to go visit Winnis, but this time she left without Max.
Mm-hmm.
While she was gone, Clifford did what Clifford did. One day, Clifford went to get the mail, and inside the mailbox, there was a letter addressed to Max. Now, Clifford recognized the handwriting. It was Heather's. He opened it and read it, which I'm sure just...
I think most people probably would in that circumstance.
Oh, hell yeah. You would not. I'd rip that thing open so quickly and probably rip it to shreds.
Yes,
actually,
I agree.
Trying to get it open.
Mm-hmm.
But when he read it, he discovered it was very affectionate towards Max. And now Clifford was like, here's proof. They're having an affair. It's proof.
It's almost Clifford like Heather is pushing him to do this.
Heather, I don't like to victim shame, but Heather doesn't seem like a very nice person at this
point. Well, that's what she's like pushing
I'm sure
him.
She was a lovely woman, but I don't like how she deals with the situation. Can I put it that way? Is that
yes,
nice?
Yes, totally. Yes.
But there's still no excuse for what Clifford is about to do.
No.
So I'm just going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Clifford ran into the house and he confronted Max with the letter. And you know what? Max, he didn't deny anything. He actually was embarrassed. And he packed up his stuff and he left. Clifford was beyond livid. I mean, he was out of his mind. He was so angry, he left the house and he drove 15 hours straight to Sydney just to talk to Heather.
Mm-hmm.
He only stopped to get gas. When he got there, Heather explained that, Winnis and I, we were just drinking and we just decided to write the letter as a joke.
Oh.
Not a very funny joke, Heather.
Not at all.
And Clifford, so wanting to save this marriage, he believed her. He accepted this.
Yeah. He's wanting something them to work out. Yeah.
It's over and he just can't face it.
Gotta let go, Cliff.
It breaks my heart. It's kind of pathetic, to be honest.
It is.
It breaks my heart.
I mean, they have 7 kids. You know, they're trying to make it work. I get it.
Actually, one of the kids, I didn't say this earlier because it really doesn't mean any difference to the story, but one of the kids is actually hers and he adopted the child. And they had also had another one, but died in its infancy.
Oh, okay. Hmm.
So those are just extra facts that really didn't.
Mm-hmm.
After they confronted and Heather gave her excuse, Heather left to go back home with Clifford that very day. And can I tell you what an uncomfortable journey that was?
Ooh, 15 hours.
Can you imagine?
No.
15 hours. She's with somebody she doesn't love, who's mad at her for an affair that she's having, which she's denied, and it's got to be hell. I mean, mm-hmm. That's got to be uncomfortable and just pure, utter hell. That's got to be one of the circles in Dante's Infernal, isn't it?
I say her.
With Max gone, Clifford and Heather's relationship only got worse, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Then, to add to this hostile environment, Winnis left her husband and moved to Hope Forest with her 16-year-old son, Danny, and a new boyfriend. I'm not sure if Winnis and Danny moved into the Bartholomew house, but I think they did, but I'm unsure about the boyfriend. Clifford did write in his journal about how much it hurt him to see Winnis and the boyfriend hang all over each other because his wife refused to touch him. She was repulsed by him.
Mm-hmm.
In late August, Clifford and Heather had a huge, awful fight. And at this point, Clifford just decided to leave. And he moved in to his stepmother's house, which was about 8 miles away. And Heather was more than fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
As Clifford was leaving, Heather said, you know what? I'm thankful for everything that you've done for me and the kids. But you know what? I just lost any and all feelings for you. She then invited him to come back the couple weeks to see the kids for Father's Day.
Hmm.
Father's Day that year was on Sunday, September 5th. Clifford, all excited to return to the farmhouse, bought gifts for the kids. He bought some lollipops. He bought some sodas for the younger kids. And then for the oldest, the 19-year-old Neville, he bought Neville a 22-gauge rifle.
Oh.
He bought a bottle of rum for Heather and Winnis. And beer from himself. They were going to have a little party.
I'm not liking the sound of this so much.
When Clifford arrived to the farmhouse, Only Neville was home. The rest had gone off to visit other family members. And Clifford was not happy. He felt insulted. He was slighted. It was Father's Day, and everybody should be there to greet him. Right?
And she'd already said that he could come over, right? So that's
It devastated him. It really, it almost broke him, to be quite honest. But the next thing is what broke him. Neville told Clifford some really bad news. Heather was moving everyone to Adelaide, and she was going to get a waitress job to support the family. And the worst part, they were all moving in with Max.
No, this is not going to be good.
When Heather and the kids got home, only the baby, Sandra Jane, the 4-year-old, hugged him hello. The rest just kind of seemed to ignore him and go about their business. And Clifford just felt his world slipping away from his fingers. I mean, just, he felt alone and just horrible.
Yeah.
After dinner, Clifford and Neville drank some beer and watched TV. And right before it was time to leave, Clifford made a ditch effort to speak to Heather. Went into the bedroom and they talked, and Heather said, you know what? Really, there's no hope of any type of reconciliation. He could always visit the kids in Adelaide, just as long as, quote, you don't interfere with my private life.
Oh.
Totally understandable.
Yeah.
Get that. It's the right thing.
It is, but
it's hard to take, especially when you love someone so much.
Yeah, maybe just a little softer. Let him down a little bit more easy.
On the way back to his stepmother's house, Clifford just stewed about the day. He couldn't believe that he had done so much for her and his kids, and this was how he was treated. He did almost everything for those kids, and you know what? He thought, Heather, you know what? Heather is an unfit mother. She could never raise those kids on her own. He did all the work. He's the one that raised them. And that night in bed, he just tossed and turned. He was so angry.
Mm-hmm.
By 12:30 a.m., he decided to go back to the farmhouse. His plan? He was going to knock Heather unconscious, drag her out to the shed, and then shoot her. He was going to use the rifle he had bought Neville, because it was still in the car, because he had forgotten to give it to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he said. He forgot.
Mm-hmm.
When Clifford arrived at the house in Hope Forest, he went to the shed, and he grabbed a rubber mallet, and he loaded up the rifle. Then he quietly snuck into the house and went into Heather's bedroom. Shining the flashlight on the bed, Clifford saw that little Sandra Jane was in bed with her.
Oh, no.
And two other kids were nearby. Clifford left the rifle at the door and walked up to the bed. Then once again, shining the light directly in Heather's face, Clifford took the mallet and slammed it down on her head.
Oh.
Heather woke up and started screaming for her sister, Winnis. Clifford brought the hammer down again, knocking her out. And Clifford would later say that hearing Heather's piercing scream and seeing the look of disgust and hate on her face just made him snap.
Oh.
When Winnis came in to help Heather, she saw Clifford. She grabbed the rifle at the door and ran outside. Clifford followed her, took the mallet, hit her on the back of the head, then grabbed the rifle and shot her. She barely made it in the car. Barely made it in. After killing Winnis, Clifford went back into Heather's room and shot her several times in the head. Neville, the oldest, had woke up by this time and fought with Clifford. Clifford took the rubber mallet and hit Neville, knocking him out in the hallway. Clifford looked up and saw his daughter Christine, 17 years old. She was standing by Heather's bedroom and she pleaded, quote, don't, Daddy, don't. Then Clifford put the rifle close to her head and pulled the trigger. He did the same with Sharon, who was 15, Roger, who was 7. Then he went back to Neville. He had started to moan, and he shot him point blank. Clifford then went back into Heather's room. Clifford then went to Heather's bedroom and saw Heather, 13, and Gregory, 11, and little Sandra Jane, 4. They had been too frightened to move. He went to each of them, raised his rifle, shot them point blank. As he turned to leave, he suddenly remembered little 16-month-old Danny. And he was the last one to be killed.
God, he killed the baby too?
Killed everybody. In his journal, Clifford would later write, quote, "All of a sudden, things seemed dead quiet. By this time, I was standing in the kitchen with my rifle in hand. I was wondering what I was doing with it." After everyone was killed, Clifford went into the kitchen, took some aspirin, and poured himself some coffee. Then he went back to look what he had done. Quote, "I couldn't bear to see them lying there like they were, so I took some blankets from the bed in the girl's bedroom and covered them all up." In his journal, Clifford wrote about the murders, quote, "My mind was in a state of madness. I couldn't stop myself." After he covered up the children, he called his stepmother and confessed. She asked him if he had called the police. He said not yet. He was going to kill himself. He was planning to kill himself. I'm assuming she's the one that rang the police, because when they showed up, they found Clifford drunk in the house.
Drunk?
He sat there and got drunk. I mean, what else are you going to do to numb the pain, right?
Oh, my gosh.
During a police interview, Clifford stated that he only intended to kill his wife, then said that Winnis was to blame for his marriage falling apart. When they asked him why did he kill his kids, he stated, quote, "Once I had killed Christine, I realized I had to kill them all. I couldn't leave any of them behind. I loved my children very much. I couldn't leave any of them behind. I had to kill them all." Clifford was tried at the Supreme Court, where he pleaded guilty to murder and was sentenced to death on November 23rd. Upon appeal, defense argued that the murders were completely out of character for Clifford, and he was normally this mild-mannered man. And they claimed that Clifford was legally insane at the time of the murders due to depression and emotional disturbance. Which, I can see that, but no.
I can, however.
But no. No. I draw the line. Sorry. Clifford was initially sentenced to death by hanging, which was later commuted after, I believe, Australia passed no death penalty law. Or they did away with the death penalty. That sentence was later commuted to life in prison. But on December 10th, 1979, after serving 7.5 years in prison, he was released on parole.
No, he was not.
He was. And this public outcry, people were livid.
7.5 years?
For murdering. That's what? That's not even a year per
kid, person. Yeah.
Yeah. People were livid. I mean, horrible. Even the South Australian police officers didn't agree with his release, and he was a model prisoner, but there was, come on. I mean, just come on.
Mm-mm.
And after Clifford was released, he completely disappeared.
Of course he did.
Nobody knew where Clifford was.
Mm-hmm.
Then, in 2012, Merlin Palmer, sweet little Christian woman, passed away a few years after her husband Cliff did. As her children were going through the papers, came across their stepfather's prison discharge papers. Now, all the kids knew that, you know, there was something in their stepdad's pap. Papa Cliffy is what they call, or Poppy Cliff is what they called him. You know, they claim, you know, my sweet little devout Christian mother, she was, quote, motivated by her faith, which transferred into willingness to save the soul of Palmer. He went by the name of Clifford Palmer now. And that was a quote from the Daily Mail UK. The two were married for 22 years. And one of the now adult kids said they couldn't believe that the man, this Poppy Cliff, could have done something as horrible as this Cliff Bartholomew, you know?
Right,
like,
right.
They couldn't believe he was so kind and so gentle. And the quote was, "He never disrespected our mother, and they hardly had a raised voice in more than 20 years together. He was a gentleman, and he loved us, and we all loved him."
Hmm.
Could you imagine coming across that?
No.
Hey, Camille, did you know your mom was married to Charles Manson?
I mean, seriously.
That.
But, you know, probably the Heather and Clifford's chemistry, he probably did have a spout of insanity, right? As far as the courts go, when he lost it. And with his second wife, they probably loved each other and she was committed to him. And therefore, it was
totally
fine.
Different.
Yeah. But I don't understand how you could ever do that. And then after 7.5 years, go on with your life. Live your best life. Seriously? Like,
I can't believe they would even let him out after 7.5 years. Seriously, was there some sort of paperwork problem? I mean, you can't blame it on a computer error. It's something.
No, you cannot.
That's unbelievable. I mean, in all accounts, before any of this happened, Clifford was very sweet. He was a hard worker. He did what was right for his family. He loved them unconditionally, and he loved them hard. But like he said, he worked himself into such a rage, and he talked himself into Heather couldn't raise those kids. He loved those kids so much. He's the one. I mean, you could see how it all went.
Oh, yeah.
In his head, but you can't see how. And like he said, the minute his wife screamed and he saw how she looked at him with disgust and hatred, that it just set him over the edge.
Yeah.
But I mean, come on. He was going to kill her anyway. That's what he went there to do.
Yeah. Ooh-wee. Nope.
As far as I can tell, that was the worst case of...
That's terrible. And terrible that he got out. And so it goes to say, when is your punishment done? Like, you know, maybe he did lose it for a minute. Maybe he did, as far as the courts go, he was criminally insane. But does that mean that 7.5 years... You're good? You get out?
Oh, I believe in that minute he was insane. It was a rage killing. I
mean, yeah. But you still have to do your punishment. And I don't know if 7.5 years is enough.
It's nothing. That's not even a slap on the hand. That's not even sitting in the corner punishment. You
get two DUIs and you get that. And that's not even killing anybody.
I was flabbergasted when the whole thing just amazes me. I can't
it's
believe
different,
it.
It's different
so
countries
hard for me
are
to
so,
understand.
Yeah, different countries are so different than the U.S. And we are conditioned how the U.S. He would have been put to death in almost any state. Guaranteed.
That allowed the death penalty.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, to kill a 16-month-old child alone.
10 life sentences. I don't know.
Your own children. I mean, your own flesh and blood.
Like, how would
it's
you sleep
unfathomable.
At night? How would he sleep at night? You would shut your eyes. That's all you would see. Oof.
I mean, he loved those kids, and he carefully and one by one, they were all awake. And I cannot even imagine the horror and the betrayal those kids felt when they saw their father raise the rifle to shoot them in the head.
But then
it's one thing while they're sleeping. I mean, it's still horrible, but at least they never wake up and see your face.
Mm-hmm.
Just gives me the shivers.
And I also think that during the course of killing all those, and he had to travel to different rooms, so it's not like they were lined up against a wall and he went and knocked them all out at the same time, right? So during all of that, didn't he snap back to reality and kind of in his head realize,
well, he thought if one was gonna go, they all had to go. No one could be left behind.
I know a lot of parents that kill their children think that often too, you know? They think they're doing them a service.
Well, that was only after he killed Christine. I mean, he had no intentions of killing them at all.
Mm-mm-mm.
But he saw Christine, she begged him not to do it, and he still did it. And then he knew he had to kill them all.
It's awful. Shame on you, Cliff.
Ooh. Shame for shame.
Well, Jen, that was a doozy for the...
And, you know, I had a real hard time with this because I really feel some sort of sympathy for him because of
I understand
what
he goes
through.
Yeah, we
but
do.
Still, he's
we do,
a goddamn
but they
bastard.
Don't, you know what? Then you take them to court and you sue them for everything. You sue them for custody. You sue them for financial needs. You don't kill them. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, there's other ways
to totally
get even.
See what you're saying. I mean, that's what normal, everyday, rational people do.
But and then, you know, he went on to, like I said, live his best life. So, I mean, he only had to pay 7 years for that crime. Mm-hmm. You know, that's crazy. Oof.
Insane.
Well, good job, Jen.
Thanks.
Can't wait to hear my case tomorrow on day 11.
I'm waiting with bated breath.
Well, that's it. We are so close to the end of this. It's Christmas. It's like,
I know.
It's in our eyesight.
All right, people. We love you.
We do. And remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Jen. For more information about this episode, as well as all other sources, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by the hosts, Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. You can reach Nico at wetalkofdreams.com. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from Octoberpod VHS. You can find all of his great works on YouTube. Please make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter with the handle at Our True Crime Pod. You can also email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We would also at this time like to thank our patrons. We would be so lost without you. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help support the show, you can check us out on patreon.com/ourtruecrimepodcast. You can also show your support by leaving a 5-star review on Apple or simply just tell your friends about us. It's that easy. Love ya.
He noted it in his journal. Let me do that a little smoother.
You can do it. He made note of it. Yes. And you don't have to put the in.
You're
welcome.
God, you're smart.
Smart.
I'm going to woof it. Woof it real good in the privacy of my own home after I drug the Christmas tree up the stairs.
That's right, buddy. Okay. Drugs. It's not just for the holidays.
Now, I mix up names so badly. Is that a form of Alzheimer?
No, I think you have name ADD or maybe name
and
Alzheimer's.
Numbers, I don't know. ADD and left and right dyslexia. And yeah.
Maybe you just don't
I'm a mess.
I don't know.
I am a hot rolling tire fire. That's what I am.
Well.
All right, the party's over. Ready?
Look at that. Look at that on that hill. What is that? It's a tire on fire. Oh, wait. Look, there's a second one right behind. It's catching
it's
up.
It's Cam and Jen. It's Cam and Jen.
So true. Nothing more
rolling,
true this year.
Rolling, rolling.
All right.
Keep those so tires anyway, rolling, rolling. Clifford confronted Max about the letter.
Say that again. I interrupted you.
Even the South Australian prison officers didn't agree with his relief, and he was a model prisoner. Blech. Did you even understand that mush that I just garbled?
A little bit. I mean, I got the gist of it. It's Australian. Are you speaking Australian? That's why
it is my Australian accent.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
Okay.